Welcome to the Mellow Mama podcast, where I talk all things conscious living and conscious, respectful parenting with the help of lots of great books, resources, and of course, my own experience as a mom in order to give you the tool set you need to develop amazing, authentic, connected relationships, not just with the people in your life that you love, including your children, but also yourself. If you're new here, what's up? I'm Kate. So happy to have you listening. And let's just dive into today's conversation because this is such a good one. This is a common question that I receive, not just from people outside of the conscious parenting community, I guess, or people that are trying to navigate what kind of parent they want to be, but also people within the community of established conscious parenting people, like people that are clearly trying to make an effort to sort of reshape their mindset around the parent-child dynamic and relationship, still struggle with this one. And so I'm gonna just lay it out for you. It's consequences. People ask me all the time, well, if we don't use punitive measures, if we don't use behaviorist tactics, how do our children understand consequences? And I say to them, this is a wonderful question. Let's take a look, like I have a tendency to do, at an adult real life circumstance. Because after all, parenting is just, well, not just, one major facet of parenting, especially for people that are operating in this fear-based mode of thinking, is preparing our child for the ultimate autonomy, and that is adulthood. Will my child be able to survive well, be a happy, thriving, highly functioning adult person or not? And will they also respect others, right? I think that this is a huge one, which is hilarious to me, and I hate like how I always go on tangents, but it is what it is, okay? If you're following me, you know this is gonna happen. So also, by the way, guys, second tangent, I'm clearly getting over a little something. I do not feel 100%, and I know I haven't listened to this, but I don't sound right. I just know that, so I'm sorry if you're like, this. She sounds gross today. Anyway, had to address that. So back to my first tangent. It's hilarious to me that most of the fear-based conditioning and thought process that goes into behaviorist parenting is all about, you know, like they need to be respectful people. My children are gonna respect people. They're gonna know how to treat people. And I'm pointing so hard and I don't know why I'm using this voice, but I'm sure you guys know what I'm talking about. I'm sure you've heard somebody speak like this, especially when it comes to raising children without punitive measures, without behaviorist tactics. It's confusing for them because they're like, well, how else are we gonna accomplish that goal? Why I find it hilarious though is that clearly, we're not actually looking at this situation from a bigger picture and asking ourselves, is our methodology actually working? Have we, as parents, as a society, actually accomplished that goal? Which, by the way, is a universal goal. Parents, all of them, regardless of their methodology, typically have that goal to raise children and young adults that are respectful, that are kind to one another, that are highly functioning people. That's not mutually exclusive to people that utilize behaviorist parenting tactics. That's what everyone wants, which is one reason among many that I love talking about parenting, because I get it. I get that perspective. I get that you want your children to understand right and wrong, how to be respectful, how to treat people the right way, right? But that question is very important. Is our methodology actually working? Well, considering the fact that respectful conscious parenting is technically a newer concept, there aren't really a whole lot of adult people that have been raised that way consciously, like people aren't even aware if they were raised that way, that, you know, it wasn't an intentional decision. They just happened to have a caregiver that was aware, that was a more enlightened individual, that probably didn't have the same sort of conditioning and trauma that the average person has. And this is like a wonderful rarity. But the vast majority of people, to date have been raised with behaviorism, raised with the concept that they need to be punished, whether it be in an inadvertent, less physical way like shame or guilt, to understand the consequences of their actions. Again, well-intentioned parents want their children to understand life's consequences. This is a good thing. That being said, we have to take a look at our methodology and ask, is this working though? And a way that we can do that is look at our own lives. We were most likely, again, like the vast majority, raised in this way. How are we functioning on a day-to-day basis? Do we always make perfect decisions? Do we ever still make mistakes? Is that human? Is that okay or no? Do we punish ourselves? Do we self-sabotage? What do our relationships look like? What is our parent-child relationship looking like right now? Do we feel a strain when we speak to our parents on the phone or they come over to visit or they interact with your children? Is there a lack of boundaries there? Do you feel like you can be yourself? Do you feel like you can relax? Do you feel like you could trust your parent? Right now, view for a quick second the relationship that you're probably building, if you're listening to me, I'm assuming you have younger children, with your own kids. What does that look and feel like? Do you feel like it's easy for you to view your child as a whole person, to respect them? Does that seem super foreign and difficult for you? These are important questions to ask when we think of behaviorist methodology as foolproof. Because most of the time, the answers to those questions don't feel right. They don't feel very good. We're dissatisfied with them. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's going to lead us to growth. It's going to lead us to the path of saying, what can we do differently? What can we shift? And that leads us to today's conversation around consequences and shaping a better, more full understanding of what that even means. So let's keep going. Let's talk about this. What are consequences? And how are they different from what, I guess, mainstream parenting, behaviorist methodology tells us they are? I have a personal story that I think is a perfect example. And if you follow me on Instagram, you may or may not have already seen this. It's actually in my highlights if you want to watch in real time that occurrence and kind of see me and my son interacting together of a real life consequence moment and how responding in one way, the behaviorist way, would have resulted in something much, much, much different than the way that I choose to respond as a conscious parent. So I'm going to lay out this scenario for you guys. This past winter, my son and he was about 4.5 at the time, decided that we were going to take a little adventurous hot cocoa stroll in the evening. We were going to take a walk out in the snowy weather. We thought it was so pretty and we were like, you know what, we'll bundle up. This will be so cute. And then we'll come home and we'll take a little bath, get nice and warm, cozy in our PJs and read some stories before bed. This sounds like such a wonderful plan, doesn't it? It always does before things hit the fan. So this is our plan and we take Charlie out and we're so excited. He's got his little sweater on. My dog, that is, has his little sweater on. We're so thrilled, okay? We get home, we're excited to get cozy again, warm up our hands, and then I realize I can't get into the garage. It's locked. And I'm like, oh no, this isn't good. My husband was out of town. He was literally out of the state working for like a couple of days. He's the only person with a house key, or was at the time. And I was like, I have actually no way to get into our home. At this point in time, I want you to like imagine when they like freeze the camera and they're like, see this person? Yep, that's me or whatever. So I want you to freeze this moment, okay? And ask yourself, how would I respond in this scenario? This is exactly what I do in challenging, inconvenient moments as a parent. I freeze. I imagine that I'm looking at like a football play being drawn on with a dry erase marker, okay? How am I going to respond right now? And what is it going to teach my son? Obviously, or maybe it's not obvious, I'll tell you personally, my own childhood conditioning with a very behaviorist parent, you guys may or may not have podcast met my mom, who would have had a very big reaction to this scenario in my own childhood. Due to that, I was like, okay, I'm going to fight the urge to make my son feel bad about this circumstance. I already know, without asking him, that he absolutely locked the door. And we've had discussions about not locking the door, keeping it unlocked, focusing on what I want to see, and yet here we are, freezing cold with our super old dog, my boy with his frozen little fingers, and also I was pretty pregnant at the time. I'm like, okay, how do I want to respond, right? I'm still in frozen mode right now with you guys. And when I ask this question, The quickest follow-up question that I typically ask, not just course students of mine, one-on-one consultation clients of mine, I ask this to myself, what am I teaching? What will my response right now teach my son for the short term right now and the long term for him, for his own relationships later on? What am I going to teach? So I'm going to break down both responses and what both of them teach, okay? In this moment, I said to Donovan, hey, buddy, is there a chance that you maybe locked the door? And he said, yes, I did. Knowing that we were in a not so good circumstance because of his decision. My son, because of the way that I operate with him in a relationship with mutual respect and understanding and compassion, is never afraid, first of all, to be honest with me. He doesn't anticipate me withdrawing my love from him in the case that he makes a mistake. He doesn't anticipate being punished, being made to feel awful, being made to feel ashamed, guilty. He simply tells me the truth because I am his safe place to land. I'm always going to be receptive. And that doesn't necessarily mean, I know somebody listening is like, yeah, you're a passive parent. You just let it go. No. Let me continue this conversation, okay? But I had to cut you off right there. So this is not being passive. My son just trusts that he can come to me with honesty and integrity, which I think is a very, very powerful lesson if your goal, like I said in the beginning, is I want my kids to respect me. I want my kids to know how to treat people. I want them to understand the consequences of their actions. So I asked Donovan. He told me honestly, yes, I locked the door. I said, okay, well, that's a problem because I'm not sure how we're going to get into the house. We don't have access any other way other than this door or the front door, and we don't have a key for that. What can we do? Stepping into the critical thinking, problem-solving mode. This is crucial if you're somebody that has a very hard time with big reactions and big responses. One of my favorite quotes from Eckhart Tolle has something to do with the following. I'm going to paraphrase, but if you're complaining about a circumstance, you're sitting in it. You're not present, okay? If you want to be present, you can either change a situation or you can accept it. So I could accept being locked out of my home for a couple of days or whatever, drive or ask someone to, you know, drive me to my parents' house or whatever. I could accept that circumstance. That would be challenging though, right? Or I could change the circumstance. I could figure out a solution to the problem. This teaches my son critical thinking, problem solving, solution making, and ultimately presence in difficult times. So I said, what can we do about this? This also immediately makes me shift out of that conditioned, fear-based, punitive mode where I want to just make him feel so bad for what he did, because that's how I was raised. And that's how probably most of you listening were raised too. We need to understand the consequences, right? Well, what does making me feel bad about the scenario have anything to do with the actual problem at hand? Nothing. It has everything to do with the relationship dynamic between you and the child. So what we're teaching is not what we want to be teaching at all. It's how I relate to you when you make a mistake. If you're focused on, I want my children to know that, you know, their actions have consequences, guess what? That's the nature of reality. You don't have to do anything except stay present in reality for your child to understand the consequences of their actions. If you hit a ball, it's gonna fly. It's gonna go away, right? Donovan locking us out of the house resulted in what? Us being locked out of the house. I didn't need to also teach him that I don't love him, I don't accept him, I am disappointed in him as a person. He deserves to be shamed, to be guilted, to feel bad because we're locked out of the house. That's a different thing altogether. If that's a lesson that you want to teach, that's a different subject. If you want your children to understand consequences, you must first be present enough to acknowledge what the consequence actually is. So in this case, we were locked out of the house. That was the concrete consequence of my son locking the door, even though he knows not to do that. When we offer this question to our children in moments where they've made a mistake, what can we do about this? We not only offer our acceptance of them in their most vulnerable moments as a human, when we make a mistake. This is something that I have done. I've locked myself out of an apartment. I've locked myself out of my car as an adult. I'm so glad that there was nobody there to kick me while I was down after making that mistake or those mistakes as an adult person. I knew that I made a mistake. I didn't need somebody to reiterate that I made a mistake to make me feel awful about myself because I made a mistake. I just needed someone to help me solve the problem. So once we get into this problem-solving mode, we also invite our child to be a problem solver with us, which results in collaboration, which also results in connection. So instead of a rupture to worsen the event with our child and the circumstance that you're actually in, we actually have this enriching opportunity for closeness, for connection, for the realization that you're human, I'm human, we made a mistake, now let's solve it together. If you want your child to learn the life skill of remedying mistakes, to figure out what to do once they've made a mistake. This is inevitable, by the way. Nobody is perfect. Our children are going to run into this. Okay, if you want them to become this problem solver, a critical thinker, a solution maker, what we definitely don't want them to learn in this moment is to be dysregulated, freaking out, losing our SH it, yelling stuff, growling, complaining, oh my God, I can't believe you did this, right? Shaming, guilting, that gets us nowhere. And absolutely, if that's what you're modeling time and time again in inconvenient circumstances when people have made a mistake or fallen short in some capacity, you've got to be a fool to think that they won't carry that those same habits on into their own adult life, in their own marriage, in their own friendships, in their own work environment as adult people, right? When they do simple things inside of the house, how do you want your child to respond is how you should be responding. And if you're having a hard time with that, that's where the reparenting process comes in. And you ask yourself, why do I react the way that I react? Who modeled that for me? Or why do I just feel the need to just lay on a thick layer of shame and guilt and disappointment to my child? Who did that to me when I made a mistake? And how did I feel? Now I'm doing the same to my child, right? So we now, moving forward, we get to have this opportunity, though, for connection, for closeness. Not to mention, this is like, in my opinion, like the most amazing memories come out of circumstances like this, when you work together with your child to solve a problem, a real problem. We were really locked out. This is really not a good time to be locked out of the house at all. And we didn't even have like a solution in sight. Like I said, the nearest key was like miles and miles away for a couple of days. So I'm like, I actually don't know how to solve this problem, Donovan. What can we do? And then I realized, light bulb, I love the fresh air, you guys. Even on a 30-degree day, you can just leave it to me to have a window open. I don't know why. Please, if you plan on robbing me, just completely disregard this information. But yeah, so my window was cracked. My living room window was cracked. And I said to Donovan, I just remembered. Do you remember that we opened the window for some fresh air after making dinner? I wonder if we can get in the house that way. So we put our boots back on. I'm telling you, we were prepared to go in the house, okay? We put our boots back on and we go around the back of the house. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Yes, this window is open, Donovan. That means that we might be able to get in this way. So we are now in full-on collaboration mode. Not once during this time frame did I ever make any comment to Donovan about the fact that because you did this, now we have to figure this out. Because of you making this choice to lock the door. No. No guilt, no shame. We're collaborating now. We're on a mission. And of course, the story ends with us getting into the house. Donovan actually unlocking the door for me from inside after jumping into the house, Home Alone style. Like, I even joke about that, actually, if you go back and watch my highlights on my Instagram story of this happening. It's so funny to look back on this experience and the fact that we were joking around, laughing at life, laughing at this experience together as a team, mom and son. And some people, again, would have a hard time with that and be like, you know what? This is just passive parenting. That kid should have known that that was bad. He's too old to be doing that. What other things could you say? You know better. I can't believe that they did this. This is their fault. And even shaming in front of him, like indirectly, maybe I would have called my husband and been like, you will not believe what Donovan did. None of that stuff would have made the situation any better. Nor would it have prevented Donovan from locking the door another time any more than being locked out of the house in the freezing cold would have. I can guarantee you that Donovan will not do that again. I guess I can't guarantee you, but even in the midst of that happening, he said, I have to be careful not to lock anything unless you ask me to, Mom. I didn't prod that response. I wasn't, again, making him feel bad to the point where he said that. The best way for your child to understand the consequences of their actions is to actually understand the consequences of their actions. There's no better way to learn than to make a mistake. If we are focused on solutions once that mistake is made, if we prioritize solving the problem as a team, collaborating, and the humanity in making a mistake, if we make the person in front of us feel awful about the mistake or just, derail the relationship, completely rupture it just by reaming them nonstop about it, even reminding them about it. This might sound familiar to you in terms of your romantic relationships, by the way. We do nothing about the actual problem that resulted from the action that was taken. We focus 100% in that case, on the relationship dynamic between us, on how much less love we have for the person in front of us due to what happened, due to the choice that they made, the action that they took, which is not going to help you or them in the long term because it distracts from the actual consequence. In fact, they can have no awareness around what actually happened and why and how to remedy that when they're just focusing so much on how terrible they are and how you hate them, you can't stand them, you don't love them, that they're focusing on how do I regain the love from my parent or my partner in that case. They're focusing on how, or they're internalizing the shame. I am terrible. I am so forgetful. I am so irresponsible. I am such a bad partner, son, daughter, you name it. They're not even thinking about the fact that, probably shouldn't lock the doors anymore, right? It's completely out of touch. We're not even focused on that anymore. So if your goal is for your child to understand consequences, then you've got to make sure that the consequence is visible to your child. And if you want to go even further, and have what I want for my child, for your child to be able to handle hard consequences in a healthy way, to develop healthy coping mechanisms for trials and tribulations that will inevitably arise in life, then you have to model what you want to see in your child. You teach what you are. You teach what you do, whether you like it or not. So it's not just important for your child to understand the consequences of their actions, but it's also important for your child to understand how to handle those consequences in a healthy way. Are you raising a solution maker, a critical thinker, somebody that's going to unconditionally love the people in their life regardless of if they make a mistake and if it's small or big? Is that what the goal is, right? That is what the goal of most people that use behaviorism is. I want my child to respect other people. My child's going to know how to treat people. Well, we've got to model that first. We have to be what we want to teach. And if right now, the way that you respond and react to scenarios like this or anything where your child makes a mistake, and let's say they're dysregulated and they even hurt another person that comes to mind, or they break something, or I don't know, they just have a really, really big, big tantrum and they're in front of all these people and you're like, oh, like I need them to understand like the impact that that had on me, the impact that that had on another person. 100%, your child does not want to be in a dysregulated state. It feels terrible to be in fight or flight. We all know that. I don't even want you to think about what it feels like because it's triggering. But your child doesn't like to operate there. They don't want to be there. Okay? If we want to focus again on the consequence, we can say, it looked like that hurt little whoever. Or, wow, it really looked like that little girl was feeling sad. Okay, we can focus on the response from another person, but that's the consequence. We don't need to say, you are bad. You did something bad, right? We need to focus on the consequence if we want our children to actually learn and understand them. All the other approach does is teach exactly the opposite. Nothing about the consequence, everything about the relationship that your child has with you and themselves. Their self-esteem, their confidence, their perception of who they are, and if they are lovable, if they are good. And I don't know about you, but I want my children to know that always, even if they make a mistake, they are worthy of love. They are worthy of acceptance. They're worthy of being seen and understood and heard. That they are good at the core. Regardless, if you make a mistake or not, it's a mistake. You're human. What do we do now? How can we remedy the problem? And when we take this approach and we have this mindset around mistakes, accidents, etc., we can actually enjoy the parent-child relationship even more. If your goal is to have children that you like being around because they're respectful and considerate and kind and compassionate and, you know, responsible in the case of locking us out of the house, perhaps, it's so much more enjoyable to be around a child that is a solution maker, a problem solver, and knows that your love for them is not conditional to their behavior or their lack of mistakes, their perfection, right? It opens the doorway to develop a sort of lighthearted approach to living. We can find humor in the inconveniences of life and learn to be not only unbothered by them, but empowered by them. To look for the blessings and exciting upsides, like that window being cracked on a 30-degree day. Why was that the case? How fortunate that I'm obsessed with fresh air, even in the winter. And how lucky that Donovan is so cute and tiny that he could fit through the small part of the window that I could get open, right? How awesome that I didn't break our screen and put everything right back just fine. And how fun to work together and stay relaxed through it all as a little team. I genuinely hope and pray that through that experience and all of the experiences like it, that this way of handling obstacles in life, even self-made obstacles, stays with Donovan for when he's married one day, or, you know, just as he grows and troubles arise. I think that he'll just be a wonderfully supportive, unconditionally loving partner and an anchor to all the people that he loves in his life and for his own children one day too. But you know what? I actually want to go back to what I was just mentioning. How my child will show up in a future romantic partnership due to the conditioning he's getting right now in our relationship dynamic. If you haven't read Harville Hendrick's work, Getting the Love You Want, I highly, highly recommend that book. But there's so much other work from experts in the field of psychology and relationships that suggests that people subconsciously choose a partner based on the parent that they have the most ruptured relationship with from childhood and adolescence. And that as a whole is a subject I want to tackle in a completely different episode. But when it comes to this subject matter, how we teach about consequences, how we respond to our children and show up for them when they do make a mistake, when they do, you know, fall short or make a decision that does not benefit them or us or everybody involved, how do we respond will definitely translate to how do they respond to a future partner. And if you are feeling sometimes like, man, I feel like I'm walking on eggshells around my spouse, or I'm feeling like if I actually sit and think about it, I kind of do have big responses and reactions to my partner when they make a mistake. Like, I just really give them a hard time. I do shame them. I do guilt them. I do want them to feel bad about what they've done. This is absolutely a reflection of your own childhood experience. And a lot of the time people will tell me, oh, I'm just fine. My childhood was just fine. I don't have any trauma. Well, you might not have big T trauma, but if you're somebody that's operating the system of control with your partner, your husband, your wife, you've definitely you've got some things to reevaluate in terms of the way you were responded to as a child in moments like this when you made a small mistake. Like if your spouse forgets to do something small or silly, ask yourself, how do I react to that? How do I respond to that? That has something to do with the way your parents responded to you in those exact same sort of moments. That's why I wanted to circle back to this really quick, because I think it's an important thing to reflect on. When it comes to conscious parenting, I say this all the time, you know, it's not a like how to get your kids to be a certain way philosophy. It's not a how to get your kids to do what you want them to do practice. It's a practice of awareness around why we do what we do, why we think the way we think and feel the way that we feel. So it's important to reflect on all of our relationship dynamics when trying to reshape our mindset around the parent-child one. And it's just extra great food for thought when contemplating how, again, to address this very kind of thing in your current relationship dynamic with your children. When they do make a mistake, how do I respond? And how is that going to affect them, not just in the short term, but how is that going to affect their future partners? How is that going to affect their future children? This is important stuff to think about, in my opinion. But anyway, I want to go ahead and move on to something, a couple of questions that I asked in my stories after sharing the story of getting locked out of our house on my Instagram. I just feel like when it comes to these more challenging concepts and unraveling the conditioning that we have, it's really beneficial to actually reflect on our own personal experience and how we would feel in this circumstance. So the first question that I asked was, how does this mindset shift feel to you? To move away from blame and shame in moments like the one I described. I want you to really reflect on that. You know, how does that mindset shift feel? Is it difficult for you? Does it feel natural to you? Or is it sort of like, this seems like common sense. It makes sense to me, but it's easier said than done. I think for me, that would be my response. So if you feel like, you know, sometimes when I get these responses in my Instagram story of people that are, it's so natural for me, or this comes so easily to me, I'm like, I want to be like, kick a rock, to be honest with you guys, because I am a really relaxed, chill person by nature, and a lot of this stuff does not come naturally to me. It depends on your conditioning. It depends on your own upbringing. It depends on your own personality. It depends on the day, for the love. I mean, it might just be like you're dysregulated due to a thousand things going on in your life that make this particular outlook difficult to apply in real time, especially when your child is having a hard time, they're dysregulated. If you yourself aren't taken care of and you're not feeling well based on, again, a lot of other factors, then yeah, this is not always going to be simple or easy. It doesn't change the relevance of it. It doesn't change that it's, you know, just objectively more helpful and beneficial for everyone. But if it's easier said than done, I just wanted to share that with you guys that I feel that way too. I feel like, yes, it is so easy when it's not in real time to address these concepts and be like, well, yeah, duh, that makes sense, right? Like, of course, that's the best way to approach these circumstances. But when it's the heat of the moment and these things are happening, when you're locked out of your house in the freezing cold as a pregnant woman with a tiny baby with little hands, not baby, but, you know, my son is little, and my old man dog, it's easier said than done to refrain from blaming, shaming, making my son feel terrible, right? So if you're in that same boat, I totally understand you and I feel you. I get it. This is a practice. We're not looking to be perfect, and it's not effortless. It's not always easy. And I'm kind of just joking, okay? If you are the person that's like, this does just come naturally to me. I never feel triggered. I never have a hard time with any of these things. Like, it just is effortless. I'm so excited for you. I think, honestly, my dad, I talk about him a lot, is kind of like that. You know, he is an intuitively respectful, conscious parent and person. And I think that has a lot to do with his upbringing being very, very unconditionally loving on the part of his parents. And he's just one of those very fortunate people that doesn't have a whole lot of unraveling to do. His love is 100% unconditional for every person. In fact, one of the quotes that I saw recently that reminded me so much of my dad was from Willie Nelson. And it said, if you want to get along with people, let them be who they are. And I'm not sure if that's exact, but I was like, man, that to me sounds exactly like my dad. You know, he doesn't ever want anyone to be different or change, or he just accepts them for who they are in the moment that they're there together, where they're at. He meets them where they are. And I think that's a beautiful thing. But not all of us have the privilege of that kind of, again, unconditionally loved conditioning. The next question is really important from a reparenting perspective. If you were little Donovan, my son, would you have felt nervous or scared or embarrassed or ashamed having done that same thing with your parents? I think it's interesting that over 70% of people in this poll said absolutely 100%, and 23% said a little bit. I think that personally for me, I would have anticipated the worst possible reaction from my mom in that circumstance. And again, if you're somebody that struggles with this mindset, struggles with not having big responses or reactions, or feeling the urge to shame, to guilt, ask yourself this question and seriously reflect on it a little bit. Now, the next question is, would you have felt the need to maybe lie and say that you didn't lock the door? 76% of people said yes to that question. And my next question has to do with that. Have you ever noticed that lying is a natural coping mechanism for you now as a result in your adult life based on this conditioning? And a lot of people might at first be like, no, I don't find that I lie as an adult person, right? I'm not dishonest. But I said, next, you'd rather be dishonest than upset someone? This, for me personally, has been true for, I would say, a lot of my adult life until becoming a parent, where I was like, you know, this is clearly conditioning from my childhood, where I'm so afraid to disappoint, displease someone. And I saw this come up a lot in an abusive, unhealthy relationship dynamic that I was in at the time of realizing all of this. Like, wow, I'm doing the same thing with this partner. I'm so scared of them having a big reaction, being disappointed in me, disapproving of me, not accepting me, withdrawing their love from me. I mean, it's exactly what we do as children with our caregivers. So it's important, especially if you are an adult person that's like, man, I do kind of have a a hard time telling the truth if I have a feeling it might upset somebody. Even just little white lies, like just telling somebody the sincere, honest reason why you can't go somewhere, or why you don't want to go somewhere, or do something with them, or whatever it might be. If you have a hard time just being honest, being direct in a loving, kind way, then it might have a lot to do with the way that your parents responded to you as a child. The next question that I had was, is it hard for you to not feel like you need to teach your child a lesson by shaming them and blaming them when they make a mistake? This was like 50-50 between the response, sigh, yes, and a little. I think that this is, again, at the core of this entire subject, you know, people have the best intentions for their children and their families as parents. They just want them to learn what's acceptable and what's not. They don't want them to make mistakes. And because we have our child's interests in mind, we want to teach them, right? But it's, again, it's pretty clear from even just listening to this podcast episode that we teach what we are. We teach by doing. We definitely don't teach our children when we are dysregulated or they are dysregulated. And most of the time, the best learning happens from reality, from living through a mistake and having to come up with the solution for it. In fact, the next question is, do you think that you learned more about your mistakes and how to avoid them as a young person with this methodology, or more about yourself? Feeling bad, feeling ashamed, feeling embarrassed, maybe even dumb? And 82% of people in this poll, which there are a lot of people that responded, over 1,000 people, they said, my self-image is what I learned about, and or what was taken home. And 18% of people said, I learned about the mistake. The next question was, did you feel closer to your parents when they shamed, blamed you for things? Like, they were just looking out for you, knew what was best for you, and wanted you to learn. The reason I ask this question is because people will actually directly, when I address things like this publicly in YouTube video format, or like this podcast, or on Instagram, for example, they will directly say, I actually loved that my parents disciplined me this way. They are still clinging to their inner child's narrative, like, my parent is doing this because they love me, because I am bad, and I need to learn to not be bad because I am, and so they have to hurt me or punish me or tell me that I'm not lovable, because when I do bad things, I'm not lovable. I am the thing that I did. I am bad, right? I am bad choice. And they sort of are still clinging to that internalization of shame and guilt. And that is a very, very hard thing to, again, unravel and unpack. It's painful. And sometimes it feels easier to cling to that and hold on to it than to acknowledge that maybe our parent was withdrawing their love from us because they just didn't know better. They didn't know. They didn't have the tools that I'm talking about right now. They didn't have that perspective. It was very commonplace to be utilizing the tools that all of us endured as children. And our parents had good intentions. They truly did. But I found this one so interesting. You know, did you feel closer to your parents? Like, people are saying, I know that my parents did it because they loved me. So I knew that this was a thing of love, right? A tough love. Or did you feel like they didn't love you in those moments and it was uncomfortable afterward as well? Like, there was this strange healing time frame where your parent, of course, especially utilizing behaviorist methodology, would not apologize for the way they made you feel, or the way that they reacted to you, or the way they spoke to you, or maybe what they physically did to you to quote-unquote teach you. There's that period afterward where you're sort of like the dog with the tail between its legs, like still feeling bad, but still yearning for the love from your parent, still yearning for the connection. But I think what happens over time in this relationship dynamic, like the person owning and controlling, and then the person that's being controlled and owned, which I know every time I say that, I'm like, somebody's going to listen and be like, that is so extreme. But that is objectively the relationship dynamic here. Over time, what happens, and you might be able, this might resonate with you as a teenager, it turns into very blatant resentment. Like, I don't even care. I don't want to reconnect with you. I don't care to. I don't even feel like I like you as my parent anymore. I really don't even know why I have to interact with you after the fact. Like, I just want to be left alone, right? That's why parents oftentimes view their teens as reclusive, troublesome, distant. You know, there's a lack of connection. I mean, imagine if you do this over and over and over to a person for years, by the time they are 12, 13, 14, and by the way, notice the humanity in you as well. See, you make mistakes and no one reprimand you, berate you, be condescending to you, make you just feel terrible. They're going to just be like, this is such a hypocritical dynamic. So strange. Like, why? And also just feel, they'll just feel so bad around you and feel, again, like they're walking on eggshells. It's a terrible dynamic. And of course, 98% of people, to respond to that question of, did you feel closer to your parent when they did this to you? 98% of people said they felt further from the parent, and 2% said closer. The next question was, do you sometimes get very reactive when small problems or inconveniences arise, especially if they're at the hands of your children or other people? And 75% of people said, I need to chill. And 25% of people said, I keep pretty calm. I think, again, what you already know, this is a blatant reflection of the way that your parents and caregivers responded in moments that were similar in your own childhood and adolescence. And then the last question is, do you think it would feel good to shift into that mindset for yourself and for your kids? 99% of people said, I do. I do think that would feel good. And 1% said, I like a little shame. Which I think is a great way to wrap up this podcast episode, with a final acknowledgement that we all have the same goals and intentions for our children, for our families. We want them to be able to acknowledge quality decision making and be able to have the tool set for when the decisions that they make aren't so great, and when they do result in an issue, a problem that needs solving. We want our children to be equipped with the right tools to deal with those moments and to deal with them in a healthy way, without explosive reactions or even just subtle reactions that are muddled with shame and guilt and just terrible, terrible feelings, right? Like, we want our children to be able to address this kind of stuff with confidence, with clarity, with calm. And we want that for ourselves too, I'm sure. I mean, I'm just referring to the poll. 99% of people were like, yeah, that's what I want. Other than that 1% of people that were like, yeah, I kind of like it. I like the shamey method. That's clearly not benefiting anybody except for maybe you in the short term, to just like help that egoic pain body from your own childhood release its pain onto another person who's small and vulnerable and clearly just messed up in a small moment of not thinking clearly. I don't know. But yeah, I think that we all want the same thing. And I think that this is just one great conversation to address one tiny aspect of being a parent that is challenging, but that can actually make our relationship so much more fruitful with our children. And again, like I said earlier, not just with our children, but with ourselves and with the people in our lives that we cherish. If this was helpful for you, I'm so glad. Thank you so much for listening. I get so much enjoyment out of this discussion and just being with you guys on my podcast and my other platforms. I really, truly appreciate you being a part of my community. If this is something that you want to address in a more direct way with more clarity for your personal story and your life, please enroll in my course at themellowmama.org. Our community is growing and we're doing so many exciting things moving forward. We're going to have weekly meetings where people like you and me can get together and see each other face to face online and just kind of discuss some things that are helpful and encouraging as parents and as people that are trying to move toward more enlightenment, to be more conscious and aware of why we are the way that we are, why we think and feel the way that we do, and to kind of you know, reshape our mindset and our daily habits. So check out, again, my course, themellowmama.org is where you can find that. You can also check out our book, Something to Do, that I made with my friend Bree. It's great if you're wanting some easy activities to do with your children in a like cute aesthetic coffee book format that you can leave out and reference anytime, any day. And I've also, of course, got my YouTube channel, which is another wonderful free resource full of great subject matter just like this one. So go subscribe to that, follow me on TikTok and Instagram, and I will see you guys on the next episode. Bye-bye.